Brian is a man of good peace who has worked hard for what he's got, and he's a man after God's own heart. And so I present to you Brian O. from San Francisco.
Hey, morning, guys. Morning. Pardon me while I bring up my notes. Alright, while I'm doing this, I'll tell a joke. Actually, before I get to the joke, so I'm staying about an hour south of here, and on the radio, they mentioned that in South Dallas, there was, since this is an addiction retreat, or a retreat around recovering from addiction, this mechanic, they found a mechanic who was checked in to a hospital recently for drinking braking fluid. And he's addicted to drinking braking fluid. And when they asked him about it, he said, "I don't have a problem." Right? He's in it now. "I can stop anytime." Thank you, Ken, for the introduction. It's an honor to be up here speaking at the retreat. The group in Dallas did not save my life, but you put me in touch with a way of working the toolkit described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that toolkit did not save my life, but the toolkit put me in touch with a power greater than myself who did save my life. And that's how it works for me. It's like God saved my life. The toolkit put me in touch with God, and this group put me in touch with that toolkit. And that's really important, because sometimes I spent a lot of time in recovery spinning my wheels, not getting anywhere, because I was confusing what the solution was. I thought sometimes the solution was the group. Sometimes I thought the solution was the toolkit, and neither of those things are my solution. The group put me in touch with the toolkit. Right, I get to see it working in others. It puts me in touch with the toolkit, and the toolkit put me in touch with the solution. I'm going to do a little qualifying briefly. So I spent, I started acting out when I was 15 with various behaviors. I don't really go into them. And, I found that it provided the effect I needed to get through with life. It just did for me what I could not get anywhere else. And then I spent almost immediately after my first acting out session, I was like, "Oh, that did not feel good. I don't want to do that anymore." Spent the next 20 years trying to moderate, trying to control and enjoy, and trying to abstain completely, and never got anywhere. Eventually I found SAA, the group that I found in SAA, was well-intentioned, and it's a large fellowship, and these are good people, but they were using an interpretation of the toolkit that I was not able to get freedom from. While it may have been working for them, something about it was not working for me, and I knew that for me to continue to act out was going to lead to some consequences that were unacceptable or not recoverable from, and so I needed to find a different solution. I should also mention I have a history before coming to SAA, which was I got sober from drugs and alcohol 17 years prior to this experience. So it's been I've been absent from alcohol for 27 years, and I'm very grateful to the Alcoholics Anonymous Fellowship. Mainstream or not, I'm grateful to the Alcoholics Anonymous Fellowship for being a big factor in making that happen. However, for the first 17 years of my experience in AA. I got sober in 1990, and at that time AA was at a place where, you know, there was talk therapy was what you do. It was technically an AA meeting in name, but underneath it was really just talk therapy and meetings, and make phone calls and lots of other stuff. And, oh yeah, if you have time, do the steps kind of thing. So the result of that culture being infused with this meeting maker mentality, hungry, lonely, tired, all that, you know, the human powered stuff, was that yes, I abstained from alcohol and drugs during that time. But my alcoholism basically just said, that's fine, you know, I'll just sidestep this. You know, I'm going to get relief from this spiritual malady through sex. And that's what it did. So I spent 17 years poster boy in AA, right? I got sober at 20 years old, doing, you know, for those of you familiar with AA, it was plenty of H&I, general service, sponsoring people, all this stuff. If there was such a thing as an auditor, a 12-step auditor, it's like check. Everything was checked, right? I was doing everything that, you know, that people in mainstream fellowships do. But underneath, I was living a double life with this sex stuff. And it got worse and worse up here and in here. And so eventually it led me to that place where I found SAA. Eventually, about a year into finding SAA, I was put in touch with a couple of members of the group here in Dallas, and my sobriety has never been the same. I'm very grateful to have found you. I realize I'm very fortunate. We're one of the few people that has found you. So I'm going to talk about. I was asked to talk about specifically step 12. And specifically within step 12, the first half of step 12. That's what I'll be talking about today. I think someone will be talking about the second half of step 12 later on today, but I'm just going to speak to the first half. We can find a lot just by looking at the way that the first half of the 12th step is stated on page 60. So could someone read, Tim, maybe you could read out loud what the first half of step 12 says.
Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps.
And a little bit more.
We tried to carry this message to the alcoholics.
Thank you. That's it. Okay. So I'm going to change the wording there, and you tell me what word was incorrect, right? We'll phrase alcohol as selfish sex, but having stopped acting out as the result of these steps. What it says? What does it say?
Having had a spiritual awakening.
Okay. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. What's wrong with that? Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. So it's not just, this is just one of the things you get from the steps. It is the explicit intention of the steps. That spiritual awakening. Right? How about this? Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of some steps. Why are you laughing? What's wrong with that? What it is?
Pick and choose which steps you want.
Yes. You can't pick and choose?
No.
Okay. All right.
No.
So I'll get it right this time. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We carried this message.
Tried.
I missed the word tried. Now, why is that important?
Because you're not God.
I'm not God? What did you say, Brian?
Quote unquote succeed.
You don't have to quote unquote succeed, yeah. So I'll talk about that hopefully today. is my most of my attempts to carry the message on the surface, right, it didn't present me with a sponsee who was desperate and ready to go, right? And oftentimes we interpret that as, okay, that's success. Okay, so I'll try and get it right this time. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, have I said it right so far? We tried to carry a message. What did I miss that time?
The specific message. One message.
Okay, it's a specific message. Say more. What is that specific message?
The message is a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps.
Yeah. That's right. I have had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps.
And if you have the same problem as I have, that's what's going to work on nothing else.
Say that louder.
If you have the same problem that I have, this is what's going to work and nothing else.
All right. Okay, so this time I promise I'll get it right. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, is that right so far?
Yeah. Okay.
We tried to carry the sponsee. Imagine, instead of your mailman delivering letters in your mailbox, the mailman knocks on your door and you open the door and he quickly grabs you, right? And then carries you over to the mailbox. And says, I need you to read these letters. You haven't checked your mailbox in a while, right? What does the first letter say? What does the second letter say? I need you to do this. All right, I'll try. I'll get it. This time I really do mean it. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the alcoholic that still suffers, or in our case, the sex addict that still suffers. Okay. Right, you're right, yeah. Okay. So that tells me a lot just in that statement there. Okay. So let's look at sponsorship. Is the word sponsor in the big book? Or I should say in the first 164, the doctor's opinion? Yeah. It came a little bit later. I think people seem to make a technical big deal about it, but we're in spirit, that's what we're referring to. What we call sponsorship then is what they refer to as that one-on-one intensive work. So we'll look at that kind of the statement that most people are familiar with first. Let's go to page 89. And then James here in the front. James from Paris.
Yes.
Can you read the very first sentence on page 89?
Sure.
Loud and clear.
Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics.
Okay. So right there they've identified of all the activities that are suggested in this book, of all the activities that we may hear in meetings, they're being explicit about which activity is most likely to ensure immunity from us acting out. And what is that activity? Can you read it again, James?
Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics.
Yeah. So this is intensive work. Intensive may not mean me going to a meeting and sharing on the topic of acceptance, right? It's intensive work with the next guy who does not yet have a solution. Right, intensive. Let's go to page 14. And then Bobby,
yes.
could you read? Let's see here. I'll get my book out as well. So we're going to start reading where Evie, who is who's Bill W's sponsor, has basically just passed on the toolkit or what they had for him. It wasn't yet codified in the 12 steps, but it was roughly the same thing. He passed the toolkit on to Bill. Bill had the spiritual awakening. Bill was excited about what to do, but Evie sits him down and gives him some final words, right? This is what's going to happen next. So, Robbie, if you could start reading where it says, my friend.
Okay. My friend emphasize the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said, and held appallingly true for the alcoholic or the sex addict.
And he paused for a second, Bobby.
Pardon me, yeah.
That's all right. He just read, faith without works was dead.
Yeah.
Is that sentence anywhere else in the book?
Yes.
Where else is it?
It's right on 88, right before chapter 7.
Page 88, right? I think it's the
next to last sentence.
Next to the last sentence. It's right before we go into basically instructions on how to find and work intensively with the next alcoholic. I can't stay sober on the first 11 steps. Spiritual constipation, right? All right, Bobby, you can keep reading.
All right. So faith without works was dead, he said, and now appallingly true for the alcoholic and sex addict. For the alcoholic or sex addict failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead.
And then pause again, Bobby. So it's telling me here that in order for me to enlarge my spiritual life, by the way, is there another place in the book where they mention the enlarging our spiritual life?
Jim Story.
What happened to Jim Story?
He got drunk.
Yeah.
Add milk to or whiskey milk.
Right. He was the whiskey adding whiskey to his milk guy.
He learned all about it. He had a lot of knowledge.
It didn't work. And what did the alcoholics who came to visit him, what did they conclude? What led to his relapse?
He failed to enlarge.
He made a beginning.
That's right. He made a beginning, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. I cannot enlarge my spiritual life just through the 11th step. Right. So the suggestion that in order to enlarge my spiritual life, it's got to involve work and self-sacrifice for others. It's also telling me here in the second part of that sentence that just because Bill and just because we have taken this toolkit, no matter how well we work this toolkit, we are guaranteed to have certain trials and low spots ahead. Okay, Bob, you can keep reading.
All right. So if he did not work, he would not... If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it's just like that.
All right, keep reading the next paragraph.
My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate, for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, in which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day.
Pause there. When all other measures failed, I go to a meeting. That's not what it says? Okay, just checking. All right, keep reading, Bobby.
And on talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is a design for living that works in rough going.
All right. So he's described pretty explicitly how and where he went to ensure immunity from drinking when he was in these rough spots, these trials and low spots. How many of you have tried to carry the message outside of a meeting? All right, so look around. Because right afterwards, after this retreat, you can walk up to one of them and just ask their experience. All right, now keep your hand raised. How many of you that have tried to carry the message outside of meetings, how often did it result, I should say, how do I word this? A majority of the time that you tried to carry the message outside of meetings, Did it result in a sponsee? Majority of the times.
Majority of the time.
So
I have a statistic.
Yeah.
Out of 80 attempts, one out of 80.
One out of 80, yeah. Yeah, so I saw about 15, you know, the room we got maybe was like 20, 30 people here. I saw about 20 hands go up. Of those hands that went up, every single hand went down when I asked that question. How many of you have experienced? A majority of the people did a result in a sponsee. So we try to carry this message. We heard it yesterday from a few different people that we don't know how the wheel's going to turn later on, where our message, who it's going to get to, how it's going to be carried. I want to, Tim, I'm going to put you on the spot here, because you and I talked a couple nights ago, and you shared a little bit of your story about how you found this group through the your stay at the prison ministry. Can you mention or just share briefly how you found out about SAA and what it's like now?
Two members of the Dallas PPG group came to my ministry house and shared this message with the group.
Where were you at that time?
Where I was at that time.
Talk loud, Tim.
Where I was at that time was I was facing going back to prison. And I could not stop looking at prison. Even on parole, even on facing a polygraph, I could not stop. Religion didn't do it for me. They couldn't understand it. In fact, I was on the verge of being kicked out of the halfway house because they couldn't see a way of helping me. Two members of Dallas PPG group came on a Thursday night and they shared the foundation. And I said, that was me. And the first time through seminary education, through everything I had tried, for the first time, I felt hope that my life could be saved. It did not even matter that I was going to go back to prison for 4 months on a violation. That didn't even matter to me. But if it wasn't for those people coming out and sharing the message, I didn't know about SAA. And out of that group, I'm the only one that it took. Was it a failure on the part of the individuals that came to the ministry and shared the message? Well, if you look at strictly statistics or strictly from the human standpoint, yeah, it was a failure. Because not anybody else took hold of it, and we were all SOs, okay, and needing help. So the results definitely were left up to God. And as a result of that, I have up and coming in January, by the grace of God, 10 years of sobriety from selfish sexual behavior. So, and many sponsees, and people that I have sponsored for a while, have worked them through the steps, have passed them on, various failures, but yet still, God gets the glory, not Tim Moffitt.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. So I would imagine, yeah. I think one of those two people is here today, right?
Yes.
Right. Who is it?
Ken C.
Ken. How many times before you saw Ken did you carry the message there to this particular facility?
Actually, I think that was our first night.
Damn! How about after?
Now, we got a bite right away. We got to go back to this place. And we kept going. John, it was a little too far for me, but I went a few times, and John
lot, and helping a lot of people. And I don't know if anybody else bit that stayed long term, but yeah, it gave me a lot of hope right off. But I've been doing this for a while, and I've been out carrying the message a lot. I'm looking for a new place right now, but Tim is pretty much the only long-term bike we've had.
Yeah.
But it was enough to get me hooked.
Right. You went more than once.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been my experience as well. When I go into facilities to carry the message, a vast majority of the time I walk out empty-handed. Rich, you and I talked about that as well. We walk out empty-handed from these facilities. We carry the message. Oftentimes, it looks like the reception, the way the message is received, it's like we could just, you know, would have been just as effective carrying the message to a piece of drywall, right? We just don't, like, that's what it seems like. But we don't know what's going to happen when we carry this message. We just got to try. It is not, it is no longer in my hands what happens to this message. God is in charge of what happens to this message. It is my job. It is my business. When we talk about preceding the third step, what is and isn't my business? All the things that are not no longer my business, right? My self-esteem, not my business anymore. Personal relationships, sex relationships, ambition, not my business. Financial security, not my business, right? I need to be a participant, right? Following God's guidance there, but it's not my business. What is my business is described in that third, right before the third step prayer. Getting close to God and being performing His work well. Those two things are my business, right? Those are the two things that I get to be creative on, that I get to think about a lot. And when it comes to going into facilities, the sky's the limit. We've got plenty of experience in this room and throughout PPG where we can call each other and see, where are you going? What facilities have you tried? How did it work out? What have you seen work? What doesn't work? Let's keep that conversation going. I'll mention a little bit of my experience as well in doing that. Before I get there, I'm going to...
Ryan, can I just ask,
yeah,
sort of check with you on this? Because you said you leave empty-handed, and I know you're saying you didn't have a prospect when,
right,
you left. But have you ever left frustrated and disappointed, or have you always left with your heart full, feeling closer to your higher power, in which case you're not empty-handed at all?
Empty hand,
full heart.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, empty hand, full heart. I like that. Yeah, thanks for making that qualification. Right, so on the surface, it looks like, oh, it's a failure. No, that I don't have, it's not like I'm the Pied Piper and the response, he's following me out of the prison. That never happened. but just like they talk about on page 15, like I walk into the hospital or whatever facility is, and then I walk out just something's different, like my problems are put in perspective. That happens every single time, right? So before I get a little bit more into the facility work that I've done, I want to say a bit about once we do find that prospect, whether it's through a facility or a meeting. By the way, think about it. Did you hit bottom in a meeting? You probably hit bottom before the meeting, with whatever consequence it was, right? So let's look for the people... where they're hitting bottom. Where are some of the places people hit bottom?
Jail.
Bars.
Institutions.
Bars.
Institutions.
Yeah, hospital.
Side of the corner, street corner.
Street corner, yeah.
Lawyer's office.
Lawyer's office.
Bail bonds, please.
Bail bonds, yeah. Yeah.
Bail bonds.
Yeah.
Church.
Church, the urologist office. You think about it. This is something that we get to make our business. In my community, where might people be hitting bottom? We can meditate on that and then talk about it with our sponsor. I thought about this place the other day. What do you think? Right, Steve and I were just talking about that a couple weeks ago. Yeah. In our area. So before I get a bit more into that, I want to make sure that I do touch on that once we do find a prospect, what do we do with them? Well, the chapter called Working with Others is basically our instruction manual on how to do that one-on-one work, what those first few crucial conversations look like before we actually take them through the instructions, steps 4 through 12, right? So it's about the first 5 or 6 pages describing in a pretty explicit way what those conversations can look like. We find everything we can about them. So when I do meet a prospect, I'll ask them things like, are you employed? Are you married? What's your religious leaning? Are you taking medication? Is it prescribed? Or is it recreational? The question around drugs and alcohol, I personally don't have experience taking drugs and alcohol and, finding freedom from sexual addiction. It's not that I ask the guys to stop those things, but I want to know ahead of time where they're at with that. Any other questions that might come up? What are some of the other questions that you guys like to ask your prospects just before you start talking about the nature of the problem?
Why do they want to get sober?
Yeah. Why do you want to get sober? Okay.
A question about.
Yeah. What's your family situation? Do you have kids at home? Okay.
A question about, so the use of recreational drugs. Use of marijuana recreationally is growing in this country. So I guess, if somebody's using marijuana, I haven't had that with a sponsor, but I've heard and talked to other people in the program who are using it occasionally. What's a red flag?
Let's feel that after Brian's talk.
Okay.
It's not, we've got another talk after Brian's talk. We probably need to let Brian get to the points he's trying to make.
Okay.
But some of the other questions that people ask their proteges before they get, or their prospects before they become proteges, is where you're working at.
Yeah. So we find everything we can about them, start some small talk, get them to talk about their drinking, share some of ours, or, that guy's acting out. And then we slowly segue into the nature of the problem, right? We're trying to figure out, here's the nature of the problem. We give some examples of ourselves. We're looking to see if they have the same experiences with the physical allergy, with the mental obsession. And we're basically vetting each other. I'm trying to, as a sponsor, I need to be convinced that he's the real McCoy, right? Just like he needs to be convinced that he's the real McCoy. I got to make sure that the guy I'm working with is the desperate drowning man. If I work with someone who's just like, I should probably stop this thing. I'm just kind of like a little self-improvement journey, or this is an accessory to my existing therapy work. There's nothing wrong with that approach. It's just I would not be the right person to sponsor him, personally. Some other things that I've noticed along the way is let's go to page 96. A lot of us have had the experience that once they make that decision to go through steps 4 through 12, right, that third step decision, is that there's some balking that happens, right? Who has balked somewhere between steps 4 through 12, right? A lot of us have. Most of us, not all of us. And as sponsors, who has experienced a sponsee balking somewhere between steps 4 through 12? Yeah, most of us, all right. So this,
get over it.
Yeah. So this this top paragraph can help guide us and how to respond when we see kind of chronic balking, right? I don't know your name, sir, but maybe if you
Lance,
would you mind reading the first paragraph on the top of page 96?
Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic or sex addict and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other sex addict an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance.
Thank you. So I need to be really quick to help people, but really reluctant to sponsor people, right? I need to make sure that the guy that I'm working with is the real McCoy, and that once they've started that work, that they stick with it. If I give a suggestion and they don't take it, I don't need to take it personally. It just means that I don't have what they want. If I did have what they want, they would take it. They would have taken my suggestion. Sometimes that can be helpful. I go to page 96 a lot. And that's